many, many, many times. And when I had an opportunity to bring him in studio, you know I had to do it. He is an aficionado of the classic PBS show, Ghost Rider. He is still the most versatile man in sports. He works with the MLB Network. He works with the NHL Network. He works with Fox Sports. And you can read his work on MLB.com. You can watch him across MLB Network studio programming, including MLB Central, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern. He will also be a part of Fox's national telecast of the Dodgers-Rockies game tomorrow. Obviously very, very busy, so I'm thrilled to have him in studio, my man John Morosi. John, it is so good to see you. How are you?
Jim, it's a pleasure to be here with you, and doing great. Loving the week in California that I've had, and excited about the game tomorrow.
All right, good to have you here. So it's the end of June. Why don't we start with the fact that we're a month away from the trade deadline. Let's jump into some of these rumors. As you reported yesterday, the groundwork on a possible Cole Hamels deal has advanced to a point where the deal before the All-Star break is becoming more and more possible. What is your sense of how much interest there is in him, and what does the market look like for him?
Jim, it's interesting because I think we're seeing with Hamels the way that the league is so split now between the buyers and sellers, a bit more clear of a distinction than we usually have at this time of year, is helping the market move sooner. And the Rangers would like to get out from under the money for next year. And one team they've talked with actually is in their division, the Mariners. The
sure.
Mariners trying to end the longest playoff drought in major North American pro sports. Of course, the Bills broke their streaks, and now the Mariners have the longest. And the Mariners want to find maybe one more starting pitcher with some postseason experience for that rotation. Hamels could be that guy, and I'm told that really we could see a deal in the coming weeks.
I was going to say, how advanced are those talks between those two teams for that player?
I don't think it's close. I was told by a source last night there's been some dialogue. Nothing close or imminent yet, but I think the fit is there. And one key thing, Jim, for the Mariners is two things, actually. Number one, they are not one of the teams to which Hamels can block a trade. He has a no-trade clause to nine teams where they can actually acquire him without his permission. So the Mariners are one of those teams that can get Hamels without him saying yes. And also, the Mariners, unlike the Yankees, Jim, do not have this luxury tax threshold problem. The Dodgers have that issue where they're worried about their spending. The Yankees do as well. But the Mariners are a team where they play in a market that certainly can support a larger payroll, but they haven't had to go to that level for a number of years. So really, they've got the capacity to add Hamels and probably take on, if not all of the contracts, certainly most of it.
John Morosi joining me in studio. I'm glad you brought up the Yankees. What about the Yankees? You've got that threshold for the tax, but are they involved in the Cole Hamels talks, or might they look elsewhere?
I think on some level, Jim, they are involved. I also think that at some point, whether it's Hamels, whether it's Lance Lynn, whether it's a more expensive, in terms of prospects, controllable piece like a Sean Manaea or a Blake Snell, they're going to get someone. Because you look at the Yankees' rotation, Tanaka's on the DL. Sonny Gray hasn't really delivered in the way they thought he would when they acquired him last year. Montgomery's out for the year. The Yankees, their position player group, Jim, it's special. You look at what Gleyber Torres has done. Andujar coming in and joining Stanton and Judge
sure.
and DD over at shortstop. Their position player group is so profoundly talented. They've got to find a way to get one more starting pitcher to add to that group. So again, whether it's Hamels or somebody else, they will do that. And by the way, Jim, I just love the fact that we've got this Yankees-Red Sox rivalry back to being the way it should be. They are lording over the game in so many different ways, of course, with apologies and respect to the defending champion Astros. A big series this weekend kicking off tonight.
John Morosi joining us. I actually love it. So you've got the Red Sox and the Yanks. They're matching up this weekend. Roughly halfway through the season, which team has impressed you more, Boston or New York?
Great question. I think, Jim, to me, seeing this Yankee lineup the way that it looks right now, the depth of it, I think that's been the most impressive part. But I love, too, that the Red Sox, with a first-year manager in Alex Cora, David Price, I believe, has settled in a bit more this year. He's been more consistent.
Agreed.
Chris Sale is still his dominant self. Kimbrel at the back of the game. It's almost impossible to choose which team is better right now. They've been going back and forth trading spots with the best record in baseball for the last month or so. So I think they just put together such an entertaining brand of baseball, both teams. That's why I'm just so excited for this weekend series.
John Morosi joining me in studio. John, now it's from a fan standpoint, it'd be easy to think the Yankees are fine, right? They're in a really good position to get to the postseason. Why would they worry? But from a general manager standpoint, how important is it not just to reach the postseason, but to make sure you're not in that one-game playoff?
It's a great point, Jim. And that's why we talk so much about the playoff format in baseball. They've gotten this part of it right, because You now go down to the last games of the season. No matter how things are playing out, the Red Sox and Yankees are both going to be going for it, I think, to the final days of the season. You probably see the same thing happening, at least for now it looks that way, with the Astros and Mariners in the West. So even though we have a pretty good idea, Jim, who the five playoff teams are going to be in the American League, with the Mariners probably taking one of the wild cards and then the Red Sox and Yankees divvying up the other one based on whoever doesn't win the division, we're still going to be seeing teams going all in to the final day, which I think just gives a great texture to the competition of baseball games late in the year. I think it really lends that extra layer of intrigue. And then meanwhile, on the National League side, I know in talking a lot over the years with my colleague John Smoltz, who, by the way, is playing in the senior Open this week, and amazing that John's doing that. John has this dream of finally seeing those three-team tiebreakers that wreak all kinds of havoc on those first days of the postseason. Okay, we've got to find a way to divvy up these playoff spots. I think in the National League right now, Jim, there is so much parity. There is so much closeness there where we've seen these teams emerge, the Braves and the Phillies and the Brewers, teams we didn't really think were necessarily going to be leading the division at this point in time. They are making life very complicated for the Nationals and the Cubs and the Dodgers to the point that I think we could maybe see John's dream come true, that three-team, two-game tiebreaker to begin October.
Sean Morosi breaking it down in studio. I'll tell you, it's compelling, and they're not going to factor in anything, but they might factor in other people's plans. The Mets.
Yes.
I mean, John, would they really, really consider trading either Noah Syndergaard or Jacob DeGrom? I mean, would they really do that?
Well, Jim, it's a great point, and it came up yesterday. John Rico, the new acting GM, or one of the three acting GMs they have now in the absence of Sandy Alderson, has basically said everything is on the table, and everything would include Jacob DeGrom and Noah Syndergaard. I spoke separately with a different source that said, listen, John, we're going to have to be overwhelmed to move DeGrom. And I think that's true. Part of the intrigue here, though, Jim, is that the teams with the most interest in DeGrom are those that I think the Mets don't want to deal with, the Yankees. Mm-hmm. They have not made a trade with the Yankees in season since Armando Benitez in 2003.
Armando Benitez, that's great.
There's a name for you. I don't see that happening really this year. And it's also in the same division, the Braves, the Phillies. I don't see the Mets trading DeGrom to somebody who's going to face them multiple times during the course of the year. I just don't see that. So to me, it's going to either be maybe a team potentially like the Brewers that have to me the prospects to get that kind of a deal done, or a team way off the map. And the Hall of Famer Frank Thomas said this yesterday. What about the White Sox? A team that's building for the future. When you talk about a piece like Jacob DeGrom, who's under control through 2020, you can acquire him now, even if you're not in the race. If you think you're going to be good by 2020, it's appropriate to get Jacob DeGrom. And we know the White Sox have so many great prospects from the deals they've made. That's a really intriguing possibility for
very,
Jacob DeGrom.
Very, very good point, I think. John Morosi joining us. Man, I hate this. I don't want to play this game, but I'm just going to do it. I pride myself on not ever doing this, John, but this whole notion of Tim Tebow, I mean, would the Mets bring him up? Do you have any interest in seeing him on the major league level? Is this thing going to play out before our eyes?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Okay.
I believe right now, Jim, there is a better than 50-50 chance Tim Tebow plays at least one Major League Baseball game. He has played well enough. There was a great story written in the New York Post recently about the strides that he has made. Now, playing for one of the great names in pro sports, the Binghamton Rumble Ponies of the Eastern League. The Binghamton Rumble Ponies, the name of the team. He's played better, and he's made some strides. He's shown, I think, a better approach at the plate. I think he's coming up, Jim. And there was an interesting quote in the New York Post story from one of his teammates at AA who was called up to the big leagues, raving about him as a teammate and also raving about him in terms of a professional baseball player, that he now has the look of a pro baseball player, which I give him credit for. This is not an easy thing to do, to take on something totally outside of your normal professional comfort zone. And I think it just speaks to the incredible competitor he is and his personal qualities. I admire the way Tebow has carried himself. And also the Mets have given him, I think, an appropriate opportunity. They have not over-promoted it from a standpoint of getting him all the way up to AAA right away. They've given him time. And, Jim, he's playing well enough, and the Mets are playing poorly enough that I think that he will be on their roster in September. And, by the way, Jim, if it's to sell tickets,
Fine. Something wrong with that. Well, it's not for baseball. Sports. That's exactly what that is for. It's to sell tickets and to sell merch. We know he's not there for baseball reasons. At least that's my opinion. John, in terms of the Dodgers and Rockies, and you've got that coming up tomorrow on Fox, I've got to ask you about Nolan Arenado. I mean, working that game means you get to see Nolan Arenado. When you watch this guy play, what do you appreciate the most about his game? Is it what he does on the field or maybe at the plate?
Both.
Right.
Everything he does, Jim, has a seriousness and a joy to it. It's both of those things. He takes his craft so seriously, but he has so much fun doing it. And my favorite Nolan Arenado story is this. In the All-Star game a couple years ago in San Diego, he makes the last out. He grounds into a double play off of Zach Britton's sinker. So no great shame there, right? One of the great pitches of the game. So game-ending double play. The next day, he calls his high school baseball coach, Mike Gonzalez, El Toro High School, Lake Forest, California, says, "Coach, I didn't like my at-bats. I want to get in the cage." So the morning after the All-Star game, you've got one of the preeminent players in our game at his high school field in Lake Forest, California, doing flips with his high school coach because he wanted to get his swing back. That is the essence of one of the great players we've got in our country right now. He's a phenomenal player. He, won a gold medal for Team USA at the World Baseball Classic. And one of the other great stories about that high school is probably the other best defensive third baseman on the planet was on the same infield as Nolan in high school, Matt Chapman of the Oakland Athletics. So you've got arguably the two best defensive third basemen in the world, Jim. They were on the same high school team, one at short, one at third, and Nolan, the way that he approaches the game with such joy, I think is so refreshing for all of us.
Hey, listen, I don't want you to give up where we are exactly, but El Toro is not far from where we are. So I've always loved that he plays ball there. I've got about 60 seconds. You're in studio, John. You're on live TV. For those who don't know, the glory that is Ghost Rider, what are they missing out on if they don't know?
Ghost Rider. So Ghost Rider, Jim, growing up in Michigan, was one of my favorite programs as a kid. And I really think it gave me a better understanding about the world because it was set in Fort Greene, Brooklyn. So a very diverse place. Certainly much more diverse and exciting than where I was growing up. So I remember watching that show, dreaming about the larger world and places like New York and LA that I might be able to one day travel to. So it helped open my eyes and give a passion for learning in the world. And so to anybody listening that was on the show, Ghost Rider was a big part of my childhood, and hopefully we'll see maybe a Ghost Rider reunion at some point in time, which, by the way, Samuel L. Jackson played a role of Jamal's father in the first episode. So Samuel L. Jackson, part of the Ghost Rider cast.
There it is. It gets better and better. He's an aficionado of the classic PBS show Ghost Rider. John Morosi's got so much going on. MLB Network, NHL Network, Fox Sports. And you can check him out also on MLB.com and watch him across MLB Network studio programming. John, so good to see you here in studio, man. Great to have you here. Thank you very much for doing that.
It's a thrill to be here. Hopefully we'll do it again real soon. Thanks,
Jim. I would love to do it again. That was so much content, and that flew. My thanks to John Morosi making the trip to the studio.